going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices and give you a 5-year price guarantee on talk, text, and data. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy.
This is Today with
Sophie. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
When things are tough, we talk about it. When there's something to figure out, we dig into it. And when there's joy, we celebrate it.
Because today is where it's all happening. We get the best start to every morning because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show with Savannah Guthrie and Craig Melvin weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
And off we go into hour number two with the Rob Brown Show right here on the Fan Upstate. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, live from the Bro Cave at the Casa de Love. I am Rob Brown, back at the Radio Ranch, the man in charge of this and every radio program you've ever heard, the great one, Lonzo. 4 hours of sports talk extravaganza lined up for you rolling into hour number two. Real quick, because we always try to feature your takes, your thoughts, your opinions, and your comments here on the show. Our buddy Zach checked in on our live stream, which you can watch at facebook.com/TheFanUpstate, The Fan Upstate on YouTube, The Fan Upstate on Twitter, The Rob Brown Show on Facebook, on YouTube, and on Twitch. Zach said, Travis Hunter, a bust though. Boy, gonna get creamed. Wasn't great at either spot in college. I'm not saying that you gotta think, Zach, that Travis Hunter is going to be an NFL icon during his tenure at the league. But I don't think, great one, I don't think the Heisman was awarded to Travis Hunter because he played both ways. And I don't think the Heisman Trophy was awarded to Travis Hunter because of his connection to Deion Sanders. You can make an argument a lot of what Shedeur Sanders has is because of his connection to prime time. Travis Hunter was a damn good football player on both sides of the football. Damn good football player.
Listen,
buddy.
Listen, I mean, some people don't like him because of where he played, because he played for Deion. I'm not saying that's your deal, Zach, but he looked really good to me. And I think most of the NFL seems to think he's pretty good. So he's going to get drafted pretty high, and I think he's going to do well wherever he goes.
I think the kid's going to be a player. Now, I do not think he's going to be a two-way player. I think he wants to be a two-way player, and I think he will get some snaps going two ways.
So where do you think he's going to go again?
Honestly, I the betting odds right now are Cleveland's taking him at number two. And to be honest with you, that's the spot he makes the most sense.
All right, so if he goes to Cleveland, could he play both ways? What's Cleveland's defensive back situation? What's it look like?
Not great. They need. See, that's the thing. That's why. That's part of the reason he makes most sense is they need both DB and wide receiver. They need both of those positions.
Right. So whether people want him to do it or not, or want to believe he can't do it, if Cleveland takes him, they need him to. So at least for a while, they're going to try.
I think you'll see Travis separate himself as one or the other. He'll either show up and he'll clearly be a better wide receiver than DB, or he'll clearly be a better DB than wide receiver, or he'll be slightly better at one or the other, and Cleveland will use him primarily in that spot, and then he will get snaps on the other side of the ball. Here's the way I put it to Horvat and Evans last night. And tell me if you think this is a this is possible. My thought here, great one, is if Travis Hunter is a better DB than a wide receiver, then he's going to be a cornerback, and he will get wide receiver snaps when they go like five wide on third and nine. If he's going to be a wide receiver, then he'll be a wide receiver, and he'll be an every down wide receiver, and he'll get snaps at cornerback like when they go to a dime. Right? When they're going to throw an extra defensive back onto the field on third and nine, when a team's got to go to the air, put him out there and let him. And he ends up getting 10 to 12 snaps of the football on the other side of the ball every game. I just can't, especially for a rook. And this may change like 2-3 years into his career. He's established. He's within a franchise. He's become kind of a face. He's kind of a guy, kind of a dude for a team. Then maybe down the line, those numbers start to increase a little bit. But I also got to think that the snap count matters and the wear and tear matters. This isn't Colorado taking on, you know, Northwest, Southeast Texas State of Missouri. This is every week playing the best in the world on the other side of the football. My dude cannot do 125 snaps a game for 17 weeks when the other side of the ball is all Americans. It physically can't be done.
All right, so I am a believer that it could be done. Here's the thing, though. I think the reasoning for Cleveland would be, hey, we need you on defense. Look at who our quarterback is on offense right now. We don't want to waste you over there. The ball's not going to get thrown to you. That's still a work in progress. Because who's going to be the starter right now for Cleveland? It's right now, Joe Flacco, right?
I mean, that's what it looks like. That's what it looks like. Here's the thing, though. I've got a bet out. And it's a long shot bet. It's like I grabbed it like a month and a half ago at 50-1. I've got a bet out on Shador going number two to Cleveland. Because again, it is a quarterback driven league. And it's not, the Browns are not a good team. And I don't want anybody to think that I'm misconstruing or confusing the Cleveland Browns with a good team.
They do have some good players.
They've got some good players.
They just don't have a lot of them. Disagree.
They do. They've got Jerry Jeudy, who kind of broke out a little bit last year once he got out of Denver. They've got Myles Garrett. They've got David Njoku on the at the tight end spot, who was an underproved. They got an above average offensive line. They need a lot of help on defense. I'm not going to argue. Like the Browns have needs all over the board. I will say this about the Browns. The Browns are a team that I know are going to be tempted to go grab a quarterback, and I think they're going to be tempted to go grab a quarterback, Lonzo, because it is a quarterback-driven league, and it feels like everybody is always looking for their franchise quarterback, and that's understandable. The Browns are not one of the teams that you look at and go, they're a quarterback away, right? Like, that's the one thing that prevents me from taking the big stone step and locking Shador in as their pick at number two, because they're not a quarterback away. It does feel to me like they might be intrigued by it. But realistically speaking, either pairing Abdul Carter on the right side with Myles Garrett on the left, or getting Travis Hunter and letting him naturally fall into either the wide receiver or the DB role as a primary, feels like the right thing to do, and taking advantage of his ability to occasionally play the other side of the ball is a plus.
What if you take a chance that that all the talk of Shador is right and that he's going to drop? Because just looked it up, I was curious. Cleveland's first pick in the second round is the 33rd overall, so that's the first pick in the second round, right?
That's first pick in the second round, and this so is part of the
if
reason.
If he were to drop. I mean,
if he drops out of the first round, then they get them both anyway. Now, again, I don't think there's a shot in Hades that he is dropping out of the first round. Could he drop down to Pittsburgh at number 21? That's a possibility, but I don't think he's getting past Pittsburgh at number 21. I think if anything, they would take him there. This is part of the reason that I've said, if I'm Carolina, make the call to Cleveland. Be like, yo, swap us. We'll go from 8 to 33, you go from 33 to 8, and give us about 6 picks over the next 2 drafts, and we'll make that move. Because I will tell you, I think there are some guys at the edge rusher spot that will be available at 33 that aren't going to be a huge fall off from the guys that are available at number 8. Like Abdul Carter and Mason Graham are the two guys in the top 10 that I think that separate themselves on the D-line from everybody else. Everybody else after that, I feel like there's a couple of guys like Jalen Walker, very good. That's a top 15 pick, top 20 pick. But the guys after him, like, it's not a huge drop down. That's part of the reason I've said, like, if I'm Dan Morgan, I'm on the phone with Cleveland going, look, you can, the only way to guarantee you're getting both kids out of Colorado is to make that trade to number 8, because Shador's not coming to 33. So make the swap and give us a handful of picks. We'll go 8 to 33. We still got our edge rusher. You get your two Colorado guys. You fill three needs with two players. Why would you not make that swap? That would be my round one big time swing if I was Carolina.
Oh, that would be wild if that happened. It really would.
It is certainly possible. Ladies and gentlemen, it is 7:09 in the morning. You have less than 51 minutes until you have got to get your Rudy Patootie candy ass into the office, sat down behind that desk, knock out those quick emails, and then about 7 to 9 minutes later, take a break, walk down the hallway, find your way to the water cooler, find that 3 to 4 coworkers that you actually like, and talk sports with them. And if you're going to do that, well, ladies and gentlemen, you need this. It is the Water Cooler Cheat Sheet, the top 3 sports stories that you need to know before you get to the office this upstate Wednesday morning and start talking sports with the 7 to 9 people at work maximum that you like. When you do, my dear friends, this is what you're going to be talking about. Let us dive right in with item number 1. NBA playoffs underway. 3 games taking place last night. 2 of them in the West, 1 in the East. We will start with the game in the East, 123-115. The Indiana Pacers now up 2-0 on the Milwaukee Bucks. Damian Lillard did make his way back to the floor after that deep vein thrombosis issue that took him off the floor. It was not the triumphant return that Dame hoped he would have. 14 points on 4 of 13 shooting, 2 of 8 from range. Did have 7 assists in the ball game. Giannis Antetokounmpo led all scores with 34 points for the Bucks, but it was not enough. All 5 Pacers starters in double digits. Paced by Pascal Siakam, 24 points on 8 of 16 from the floor, 21 from Tyrese Halliburton, who also had a dozen dimes in this game as well. When it came down to it, Milwaukee did a lot right. They shot almost 51% from the floor. They shot 40% from the arc. The problem was Indiana did everything right as well. They shot 49% from the floor. They shot 44.25% from 3-point. They knocked down all 19 free throws, and at the end of the day had just 8 turnovers compared to Milwaukee's 15. Youngsters out there that want to grow up and be ballers, listen to Uncle Rob. Take care of the gosh darned basketball, please and thank you. Fewer turnovers will get you a lot of wins. Over in the West, 118-99. As I mentioned, there is just one series in the first round that I do not think will be competitive at all. It is Oklahoma City versus Memphis. They are now up 2 games after winning game 1 by 51 points. It was all but a breeze last night for the Thunder. 118-99. They had the Memphis Grizzlies down 32-17 at the end of the first quarter. The Thunder led by 27 from Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, 24 from Jalen Williams, and 20 from Chet Holmgren. Oklahoma City shot 43% on the night, but had 104 field goals attempted. They were 15 of 45 for 33 1/3 percent from behind the arc. And again, take care of the basketball. 7 turnovers while taking it away from Memphis 14 times in this game. Memphis shot just under 43% and 10 of 31 from range. So the Thunder now up 2 games to none on the Grizz. And then a late night tip that I did my best to stay up for, but just couldn't make it. 94-85, the Lakers take down the Timberwolves to level that series at a game apiece. You had 31 from Luka Doncic. You also had a dozen rebounds and 9 assists, just one dime shy of the triple-double. 21 from LeBron James on 8 of 19 from the floor. The Lakers as a team shot 45%, just 20% from behind the arc of 6 of 29, but they were able to hold Minnesota to 38% from the floor and just 5 of 25 from behind the arc. In game number one, everything Minnesota threw at the bucket went through the net, and they were able to consistently and reliably just out physical the LA Lakers. Last night, not so much. I still only got one rebound out of the 7 foot tall Jackson Hayes on the night. He only played 9 minutes, but I got a dozen boards from Luka. I got 11 boards from LeBron. The very last thing I said to Brad Evans before I got off BetMGM tonight last night was, if I'm only going to get one or two rebounds out of the 7 footer Jackson Hayes, I've got to have triple double caliber performances out of Luka and LeBron. Last night, Luka was one dime shy of a triple double. LeBron was just 3 assists shy of a triple double. You got triple double ish performances from Luka and LeBron, and the Lakers get a 94-85 dub to tie that series at one game apiece. Let's rapidly run to item number two. Three-1 winners, the Carolina Hurricanes now on top of the New Jersey Devils in the Eastern Conference round one playoff game. 3 found the net last night for the Canes. You had an empty netter at the end of the night for Seth Jarvis to sink the dagger. It was Jordan Martinook, and it was Shane Gottesbear that got one in the main portion of the contest. Frederick Anderson in the net last night for the Canes, stopped 25 of 26 shots. It was a brutal game. We had some headbutts. We had some big shots into the glass. At the end of the day, the Canes are just a bunch of jerks who played a good physical hockey game. This is going to be a series that the Canes should sweep. They may give one back. Game number 3 in Jersey on Friday night. But at the end of the day, this is a classic first-round NHL series. One team is just better and tougher. The question is, do they play the fundamental hockey right to get the dub? So far, so good for Carolina. Up 2-0 on New Jersey. Let's go to item number 3. A 5-game win streak not to be for the Atlanta Braves. 10-4, they fall at home last night to the St. Louis Cardinals. It looked good in the early going for Atlanta. St. Louis jumped out to a 2-0 lead. Atlanta, in the bottom of the fourth, were able to get it back. Sean Murphy sent a dinger to left field. Alex Verdugo got a double to center in his first game since being called up from Gwinnett. Was able to score Jared Kelenic on an RBI. Then Austin Riley reached on an infield single. Verdugo scored on the error. It was 3-2 Atlanta. They would maintain that score until Matty Ice Ice Baby Olsen shot one 390 out the left center. 4-2 Atlanta. But then it was all St. Louis the rest of the ride, including the top of the eighth, where Gorman had a double to right that scored 3, giving St. Louis a 7-4 lead that they would not surrender. So the Bravos cannot make it 5 in a row. They have, however, won 4 out of their last 5, and they get one more chance at St. Louis tonight. It was a bullpen game by and large for the Braves last night, which was kind of a part of the problem. Tough to have a bullpen game, tough to win a bullpen game when you don't have a bullpen. The L is going to ultimately be charged to Aniel De Los Santos, who did go 1 inning, gave up 2 hits, 3 earned runs. Wileys would come in at the end and give up another 3 that would put the exclamation point down for the Redbirds, but it goes south for the Bravos. They end their winning streak at 4. They will try to start a new one tonight at home against the Redbirds in the finale. That's your water cooler cheat sheet, the 3 stories you'll be talking about at the office today when we come back here in just a minute from now. a major alteration to the college football major bowl series that is being made to accommodate the new playoff format. Well, it's not new. The second year playoff format, I guess. But a major change to one of America's biggest games. I'll tell you what it is and what it says to me about the future of college football when we come back here in just mere minutes from now. I am Rob Brown, the great one, Lonzo on the ones and twos. The Rob Brown Show rolls on. This, ladies and gentlemen, is the Fan Upstate. Rob Brown Show back on your radio. It's the Fan Upstate. Text line is open, by the way, the Hub City Spartanburg text line at 844-326-3663. 844-326-3663. Let's see here. We have got a text from Eric talking about Shedeur Sanders, who has become a bit of a conversation piece on the show this morning, which is fair. Your takes come first at 844-FANFONE. Eric texted the show, said, isn't Shador's arrogance a given because of who his dad is? I expected just because of who his dad is, you draft him, you draft his stage mom. End quote. Eric, appreciate that text. Thank you very much.
So I have a question about arrogance, okay? I mean... What is the fine line? And I've always had this problem. What is the fine line between arrogance and confidence? I mean, one person looks at a guy and goes, that dude is confident. He knows where he's going, knows what he's doing. Another person goes, oh my God, he thinks he's God's gift to everything. I mean, so it just seems to be a matter of opinion.
I think I've come up with an answer to that, Lonzo. I think. Tell me if it's a good one. My answer to that is, when you can back it up and can't nobody say nothing. That's my answer. When you talk smack, which is to me what arrogance ultimately is talking. You're talking. It doesn't have to be, I know this sounds dumb, it doesn't have to necessarily be verbal talking, but it can be your actions, your behavior, whatever. When you can back it up and can't nobody say nothing, that's where it crosses from cockiness into arrogance. And let's be real clear. The most arrogant dude who can back it up can also lose it immediately. All it takes is one knockout, man. All it takes is one fat L, and that completely changes everything. I pointed out yesterday on both shows, actually, on this show and on BetMGM tonight, I pointed out that if you head on to the Fortress of Nerditude there at the Radio Ranch that the great one and I share, on my side of the office, I have sports paraphernalia that I've collected over my 17 years in this industry. I have boxing gloves signed by Roy Jones Jr. and Evander Holyfield. I have pictures of me with various athletes over the years. I have autographs, and I have bobbleheads, and I have signs and scarves and flags and statues and yada, yada, yada that I've collected in this stupid career that I've built over coming up on two decades now. I have merch from all different teams from across America and around the globe, with a few exceptions. There are some teams that I just will not hang on the wall. I am not hanging Atlanta Falcons fans stuff on the wall. I'm just not doing it. Well, the Dallas Cowboys are on the banned list. I cannot stand the Dallas Cowboys. And so there is no merchandise from the Dallas Cowboys on the wall, with one exception. And that one exception is an autographed photo of Deion Sanders when he was a Dallas Cowboy. It is a picture of him lined up in his DB stance with his autograph across the front. And the reason that Deion is the exception to the rule, the reason Deion is the exception to the rule is because Deion Sanders was him when I was a kid. Now, my old man, when I was just a youth, knee high to a grasshopper, as they might say out in the country. My dad was big on sportsmanship, was big on respect, was big on let your play do your talking, etc., etc., etc. And so I did not grow up a trash talker. It just wasn't in me. But I played with kids who were. And it never bothered me because it was just kind of part of the game. But to me, the difference between arrogance and cockiness, when it and let me be very clear here, because Jacob just checked in on the live stream and he said a confident person doesn't treat others as less than them, even if they objectively are less than an arrogant person does. And I don't have an issue with that definition of it, Jacob. I would say for Lonzo, the intent of this conversation, I think we keep it focused on sport, right? On athletes, on players on and off the field. And when it comes to athletes, when it comes to sport, my definition is an arrogant player can't back it up. A cocky player can. Because at the end of the day, if you can't stop the guy and the guy says, you can't stop me, he's not arrogant. He's telling you the truth, right? Like, he's not being arrogant. He's telling you the truth. Now, when I go look at Shedeur Sanders last year, one thing I can't say is that he was anything but a very good quarterback. I'm not saying he's an all-time great. I'm not saying that I do or do not believe that his, you know, number was worthy of being retired. That's Colorado's decision. I think it's a little lame that they retired Shedeur Sanders' number, but Cordell Stewart's number isn't retired, but that's a different conversation for a different time.
You're right, because in the end, this was just a publicity stunt, and it worked.
1,000%. 1,000% agreed. So, when it comes to the concept of arrogance on the part of Shedeur Sanders, and I said this last night on the big show, I'll say it on this show. I think I said it yesterday on this show. Shedeur Sanders, to me, is a proof positive that in the old nature versus nurture debate, nurture matters a lot. Right? Like, I'm not saying I'm picking a philosophy, a camp between the two. I'm saying I think they both have reality. I think they are a mix of the two. And Deion, being who Deion Sanders was, one of the greatest athletes of his day, one of the greatest athletes of all time, if you ask me, Deion had a lot to say. And Deion regularly, consistently through the course of his professional career, backed it up. There wasn't much you could say to Deion other than, you're a jerk. And maybe he was a jerk, but he was a jerk that kept getting paid a lot of money to play different sports because he was damn good at all of them. Here's the reality that I have. Shedeur Sanders is going to have a number of welcome to the league moments. Okay? I think Shedeur Sanders is going to come in cocky, going to come in confident, going to come in arrogant, going to come in prideful, whatever words you want to use there. And I think he's going to very quickly realize that while he is a hell of an athlete, there is no disputing that. He's a hell of an athlete. I'd even be willing to let you have he's a hell of a quarterback. The entire program is not going to be centered around him like it was at Colorado. The entire offensive scheme is not going to be centered around him like it was at Colorado. And on top of all of that, there's going to be a bunch of dudes on the other side who are getting paid as much, if not more than him on his rookie contract to get it done, to take him down, to sack him, to tackle him, whatever. The question mark is, will he be able to survive that, get through it, and give himself enough time in the league to actually progress his talent level and get to the next level? And the answer for me is he's got the physical tools to do it. He's got the physical capability to do it. It's up top is the mental aspect. When everything is not centered on him, and yes, obviously the offense is going to be catered toward him, or at least it should be. Every offense should be catered towards the quarterback who is running it. But when the program itself isn't centered on him, when he is not the crown jewel, as he has been the last couple of years playing college football, will he have the mental fortitude to survive that? Will he have the mental fortitude to get through that when it ain't always about him? And the answer for me is, I don't know. But what I do know is, I think he's got the talent that I'd roll the dice. I think he's got the talent that I'd take the shot. I think he's got the talent that I'd be willing to take the risk. Now, would I draft him number two if I'm Cleveland? No, I wouldn't. And it's not because of a lack of any or too much of any one quality about Shedeur Sanders. It's more along the lines of the setup. The Cleveland Browns are not a team that is a quarterback away. There are some teams in the league that are a quarterback away. I'll give you right now. As much as I had the back of Russell Wilson and Justin Fields last year, as long as I had the back of Mike Tomlin last year, which again, I think the whole Mike Tomlin winning streak thing, frankly, is a little bit overblown. As much as I had their back last year, because I thought there was an almost inappropriate level of criticism towards that franchise and that team last year, the one thing that I would for certain say is that Pittsburgh is a hell of a lot closer to being labeled a quarterback away than Cleveland is. That pick makes sense because maybe he does polish up and turn into a great quarterback and sooner rather than later. But Cleveland passing on Shedeur is not because of Shedeur. It's because of Cleveland. Yes, he's got a big head on his shoulders. I'm not going to blame him for it. I'm not, because he grew up around Deion. And when Deion got into coaching so that he could make the program revolve around Shedeur, it was set up for him to have a big head. I don't blame him for that. I don't know that there is a way that he could have known any other way. So I don't put that on him. My question mark is, can he snap out of that and still be a great quarterback? And if the answer is yeah, somebody's going to get a deal for Shedeur. But if the answer is no, he'll be a washout like any other guy. All right, let's take a break. We'll come back. We'll talk one more segment of NFL Draft next hour. We'll get into the NBA and NHL playoffs. That's all coming up on the Rob Brown Show in the Fan Upstate. So here's what's going to end up happening. I'm going to end up giving you two mock drafts over the next 2 days. I'm going to give you one today. Today is the one, because this is what I decided last night when I was like, I've got to get this thing done and ready. I've been saying for a week I'm going to have it done, and I got to tell you, it has been an absolute struggle with a capital S on the front to get a mock draft done. And the reason why is because
Hey, man, I don't know if you knew this. The draft's tomorrow.
Yeah, I know. I know people absolutely wait until, you know, the day of the draft to put out their mock draft. That's how time. Listen, I was in the gifted program at school, Lonzo, and what I learned was gifted means that you're always talented enough to wait till the very last minute to get a project done and get it done well. The one thing I got taught in school was that more often than not, I can procrastinate till the very last minute and still get an A. All right. It's a blessing and a curse. I don't know what to tell you. It's my blessing and curse is that I can wait till the last minute to get a project done and get it done every time and get it done well enough. All right. So here's what I came up with. I'm doing two mock drafts. The mock draft I'm about to start and will carry on throughout the remainder of the show is this is the one that makes the most sense, right? This is the one that based on the reports and the rumors, this is the one that based on team needs, this is the one that I think is probably most likely. The mock draft that I will give you tomorrow is Rob's mock draft. The one where I reach, the one where I roll some dice, take some shots, the one where I'm probably going to get a handful wrong, but I'm probably going to end up stumbling into a couple of, holy crap, Rob got that one right, over the 32 picks in the first round. So here's what I'm going with. Great one. Tennessee Titans on the clock at number one, Cam Ward, quarterback, Miami. I don't think that there is much debate about that one. He's like minus 50,000 on the gambling boards to go number one overall. Number two, Cleveland. I'm going with Travis Hunter. Now, reports started floating around last night that there are a few teams that have been making calls to both the Browns and the Giants offering big trades to move up to number two or number three. Ryan Poles, GM of the Bears, yesterday said that he has spoken to GMs around the league And he believes that we could have, quote, a lot, end quote, of movement up and down the draft board tomorrow. I would not be shocked to see multiple teams involved in multiple trades. That is to say, teams trading down a few, then trading back up, then trading down, trading up. We could see multiple teams move up and down the board multiple times. Number two, Cleveland, going to go Travis Hunter. Again, he fills two needs. I think he is ready to be a starting defensive back, but I also think he's got the opportunity to be a very good wide receiver. Number three, why do I have the hiccups? What are we doing here, man? Let me try that again. Number three, the New York, I'm really glad I'm not in the studio with Lonzo, because the look in his eye when he thought, oh, I can scare him out of the guy and then realize I'm not there was terrifying.
All right. So you did see that look on my face like, yeah. Oh no.
Yep.
Missed opportunity.
Number three, the New York Giants, Abdul Carter, the edge rusher out of Penn State. It was either going to be Carter or Hunter. No trades in my mock draft, so he is who is left. Abdul Carter to number three. Number four, the New England Patriots, they got to protect Drake May. They're going to go Will Campbell, the offensive tackle out of LSU. He is a day one starter, and all the reports are he is just a stellar dude, a.k.a. locker room chemistry. At number five, the Jacksonville Jaguars, Armon Membu, the offensive tackle out of Mizzou. I think he is the best offensive lineman in this draft, with the exception perhaps of Will Campbell. And I think he may even be better than Will Campbell. But I think, just based on what I've been reading about the offseason program of the Patriots, I think Mike Vrabel is going to try to establish his version of the Patriot way. And Will Campbell fits into that, I think, a little bit better than Armon Membu does. But I think Membu is the best tackle in this class, or at least is physically built to be the best tackle in this draft. He goes five to Jacksonville. Number six, the Raiders. I am going with Ashton Janti, the running back out of Boise State. Listen, is there a chance that Janti goes five to Jacksonville? Yes, there is. And I think Liam Cohen, who is kind of expected to be the next Sean McVay, like a guy who knows how to play chess with his offensive pieces, Janti would provide some versatility. But I also think Liam Cohen knows he's got to get Trevor Lawrence right, or Trevor Lawrence will not be right. That's why I've got Ashton Janti falling one spot back. I think the Raiders are looking to establish a physical identity under Pete Carroll. And again, I gave you the comp earlier on Janti, Marshawn Lynch. With the exception of one play, who knows better how to use a Marshawn Lynch running back than Pete Carroll, the new head coach of the Las Vegas Raiders? I got him going number six. Number seven, the New York Jets. I think they're going Tyler Warren. This one has been out there for a while. This is a long-running report that they are in for a tight end. And let's be real, there's really only one or two of them in this draft that feel like playmakers. Tyler Warren is absolutely one of them. And with the success of Brock Bowers last year, the Jets wanting to find a buddy for Justin Fields with no pressure on him other than being the quarterback of the Jets, Tyler Warren makes sense there. At eight, the Carolina Panthers are going to take the best edge rusher available at this spot, and I think that is Jalen Walker. Now, again, I would not be surprised if the Panthers trade back tomorrow. I want to be very clear. My number one belief is that the Panthers will trade back tomorrow, but for the intent and purposes of a mock draft, I got to pick somebody. Edge rusher is the guy. Jalen Walker can play on the inside at linebacker, on the outside at linebacker, with four in the dirt as a defensive end. He's a guy, and from what I have read, everyone who's interviewed this kid has been impressed with him. Jalen Walker at number eight. At number nine, the New Orleans Saints' Shedeur Sanders comes off the board at this spot. Again, I don't necessarily love it. And it's not because I have anything against Shedeur Sanders. It's because the Saints are not a team that is a quarterback away. They've got plenty of needs to address, but I think this ends up being a dude. At number 10, the Chicago Bears, I think, go Michael Williams. I think they end up with the edge rusher out of Georgia. I think they add some spots to the outside. At number 11, the San Francisco 49ers, Walter Nolan, the defensive tackle out of Ole Miss. I don't think he is going to go much further than number 15. I think this could also be the spot that Mason Graham comes off the board. But, and I think Mason Graham could be the pick here, but I think Nolan is more of the type of defense that San Francisco plays. He's a lot quicker. He's a lot faster off the ball, which is a class of two, him and Graham. I think that's the play there. I've got Tyler Booker, the guard, coming off the book at Dallas. They've got to rebuild the offensive line. At number 13, the Miami Dolphins. That's where Mason Graham comes off the spot. I think Graham could be drafted anywhere from 5 down to this spot, but I do not think he falls any further than this. And if it's not Mason Graham, that is only because he is flipped with Walter Nolan, and Nolan goes here, one of the defensive tackles at 11, one of them at number 13. For the Indianapolis Colts at number 14, let's go with Kelvin Banks, the offensive tackle out of Texas. I think he is clearly the third best offensive tackle in this class. And let's talk about the Colts. They got Anthony Richardson and they got Danny Dimes. Those two will be competing throughout the season, I think, for the QB1 role. How do you make sure you get the best out of both of those cats? You put a good offensive line in front of them. This is where they make that pick. At number 15, I got the Atlanta Falcons taking Jihad Campbell, the linebacker out of Alabama. It is the first time in 4 years Atlanta goes defense in round number one. Jihad Campbell is any linebacker spot to fill any role pick. They have not had a guy that good in a long time. In fact, the last linebacker who has many tackles in a season is Jihad Campbell, was D'Amico Ryans. How long ago was that? D'Amico Ryans is with the Houston Texans as their head coach. That's how long it's been since you've seen a linebacker of this stature come out of Alabama. It's a good pick for Atlanta. At number 16, the Arizona Cardinals take Johnny Barron, the quarterback, out of Texas. The Cardinals desperately need some defensive backs. Keep in mind, the Cardinals have been adding talent through the draft for the last couple of years. They kind of have the Howie Roseman philosophy. They just like to do it from the outside in. Find the outside skill talent in the draft. Go get vet linemen. Head coach Jonathan Gannon, defensive backs coach by trade. He likes a DB. Johnny Barron out of Texas goes to that spot. Number 17, I got the Cincinnati Bengals taking Mike Green, the edge rusher out of Marshall. We talked about him a little earlier in the show. 17 sacks last season, led FBS. He could be drafted even higher than that. Here's the thing. If Trey Hendrickson comes back, you have now just created perhaps the most formidable defensive end tandem in the National Football League. If Trey Hendrickson does not come back, you got a guy who is very similar to his game. You hope he works out production-wise. We'll find out. At number 18, the Seattle Seahawks, I've got him taking Gray Zabel, center/guard out of North Dakota State. A lot of mocks have him going a little bit higher than that. I don't. He had a good Senior Bowl, but he's an FCS level player who played all 4 years at college. He's been wildly consistent. Doesn't jump off the page. Sometimes consistency matters. 18 to Seattle. Number 19, Tampa Bay. Look, they've got Evans. They've got Godwin. Now they need to find the next guy. Jalen McMillan had a solid rookie year, but McMillan by himself is going to need some help. So add Tet McMillan to be the guy who is the guy to follow the guy. Listen, Evans and Godwin are both exceptional wide receivers, but they both had injuries. They both missed time. They got to find the next guy to fill in there, and I think Tet McMillan's that guy. At number 20, Denver takes Emeka Egbuka. Lonzo gets to watch one of his Buckeyes go play in the Big D, and I do mean Dallas. I do mean Denver.
Yeah,
I don't mean
that's Denver. Yeah, I disagree with you there. Don't do that.
You don't disagree with me. You just don't like it.
No, which I understand. I do like him going in the first round. I just don't like him going there.
Yeah, that's fair. Egbuka probably probably the least negatively talked about prospect in this draft. Honestly, like this isn't a class that seems like there's going to be a ton of wide receivers that people are clamoring for. Emeka Ebuka has no one saying anything but good things about him. I think he's a career, very good number two, maybe can break out to be a one, fits very well with Sean Payton and Bo Nix. At number 21, and this is where I started to have a little bit of an issue. The Pittsburgh Steelers are sitting there. Where do they go? They've got their wide receiver set up. They've been thrown around a little bit. They've got some spots that they could fill in. I think they have to be working on their next quarterback. Jackson Dart from Ole Miss comes off the board 21 to the Pittsburgh Steelers. People are very high on Jackson Dart right now. Some people are saying that the Saints might take Jackson Dart over Shedeur Sanders. If they do, Shedeur goes here, but as I don't think the Saints pass up on the glitz and the glamour, I'll take Jackson Dart from Ole Miss to Pittsburgh. Number 22, the Chargers take Kenneth Grant, the defensive tackle, out of Michigan. Why not? They've got their Michigan coach. Now they get a Michigan guy. They spent time together at Michigan. He is a 331-pound monster, and you know Harbaugh has said he wants the Chargers to be a physical team. Matt Golden from Texas, number 23, to Green Bay. They don't take wide receivers in the first round. They haven't since 2002, but here's the thing. You want to give Jordan Love a little love. Why not do it with probably the fastest guy on the offensive side of the ball in the draft? Minnesota, Amarian Hampton, the running back out of North Carolina. This is my breakout first rounder. This is my shock first rounder. This is going to be the guy that in 2 years, everybody goes, how in the hell did he fall to 24? And he's going to fit in very well with that offense. At number 25, I've got the Houston Texans taking Donovan Jackson, the guard out of Ohio State. Let's help rebuild C.J. Stroud to his former greatness. At number 26, I've got the L.A. Rams. They wanted a quarterback in the spot. If neither are unavailable, don't be shocked if they end up falling back. Will they reach for another quarterback in the spot? I do not think so. I think they go Josh Simmons, the tackle, out of Ohio State. I'll tell you what, we are way behind the break. So I will finish up the bottom four picks of that mock draft down to and including Lonzo's Kansas City Chiefs and your Super Bowl champion, the Philadelphia Eagles. In the next hour, we're going to talk NBA and NHL playoffs, a little Atlanta Braves, and more after Lonzo seduces you with his sports flash.
That was breathy and uncomfortable. In the NBA last night, the Indiana Pacers led the Milwaukee Bucks 2-0 after a 123-115 win last night. All five Pacers stars scored double digits, led by Pascal Siakam's 24 and Tyrese Halliburton's 21. The Oklahoma City Thunder overwhelmed the Memphis Grizzlies again last night, taking a 2-0 lead in the series with a 118-99 win. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander led OKC with 27 and 9 boards, followed by Jalen Williams with 24 points. The LA Lakers leveled their series with the Minnesota Timberwolves last night with a 94-85 win at home. LeBron James had 21 with 11 boards and 7 assists, while Luka added 31, 12, and 9. The Lakers' defense kept Minnesota to just 38% from the floor and 20% from range, and allowed just 34 T-Wolves rebounds.